Well, thank you, Neil. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Resolution's interim results presentation. My name's Mike Biggs. I'm the chairman of RSL. I'm just going to top and tail this session. The focus very much today is upon our interim results, which I think you can very clearly see show good progress in terms of profitable growth and very strong cash generation. It's what you'd expect to see after a period of ownership by Resolution. John's going to take us through very briefly a business review, and then Jim is going to take us through the numbers. Trevor, you're not presenting this morning, but you're very much here to answer the questions on the success story of these 6 months' worth of results. So with that, I'm going to hand over to John, and we'll have a Q&A session at the end.
Oh, well, good morning. Good morning, everyone. I think it's fair to say that we think the first half year has been characterized by substantial progress on both elements of Resolution's value thesis. Firstly, building scale in the British life insurance industry through consolidation, and secondly, by exercising strong financial and operational disciplines in the management of the underlying businesses that we own. You'll be very aware that we were very pleased to announce our second acquisition towards the end of the first half year, that of the AXA UK life insurance business. Let me just say four things about that very briefly. Firstly, just to emphasize the excellent fit of the AXA business with the Friends Provident business. We've always said that we thought the route to sustainable and proper levels of return in open business was to build scale in protection and in pensions and in annuities. And with this transaction, we make a significant leap forward in the protection and pensions markets. Secondly, I think it's confirmed the efficiency and effectiveness of the governance model that we set up in Resolution when we launched the company through an IPO in December 2008. I think what we've seen over the last few months is that the Resolution Limited board and the Resolution Operations LLP team have been able to focus on the real intensity of the M&A process, the financing of the transaction, and then the oversight of the Friends Provident business and the planning of the integration with the AXA business. While at the same time, Trevor and his leadership team at Friends Provident and the board of Friends Provident have been able to focus on being in the marketplace, winning in the market, focusing on customers, and maintaining the efficiency of their operations. And I think that governance model has really had its first kind of stress test, if you like, during the last few months and has stood the test extremely well, and more than stood the test. I think it's contributed immensely to the growth of this business. Thirdly, I think the acquisition plays strongly to Resolution's commitment to its investors to focus on cash and profitable new business. And fourthly, it endorses our commitment to working with shareholders to enable them to participate in underwriting on an attractive basis. So I think the transaction has ticked a number of important boxes for us there. Since formally announcing the agreed transaction on the 24th of June, progress to completion, I can say, has been very positive. We had overwhelming support from shareholders in the vote that took place on the 20th of July, and we've had 95.5% of the rights issue being taken up by shareholders. Those 2 points serve to endorse what we said again the time when we launched the company, that we wanted to give our shareholders a vote on transactions, and we wanted to offer them preemption rights on capital issues. And I think they've both been evident in this situation. And then we were able to place the rump through our brokers at the 4.5% rump at an average price of 252p, which was pleasing. The FSA change of control process is absolutely on track, and should enable us to complete the transaction on schedule in September. We are moving also confidently towards isolating the acquired business to enable completion again to take place in September. And of course, for planning thereafter, after completion, we've made very good progress at a very detailed level in terms of planning for the separation of the AXA business and then the integration of the AXA business with the Friends Provident business. Of course, Resolution's strategy of building sustainable, profitable, cash generative, and market-leading UK life insurer through consolidation, I think is quite an ambitious program. And successful and timely execution of it requires an outstanding leadership team and strength in depth, I think, in management capability. And since the announcement, we've been very focused on populating the leadership positions and further down the management structure. We've been able to do this from among the Friends Provident management team, the AXA UK Life Assurance management team that are coming with the deal, and also a number of senior AXA UK group executives with specialist skills and expertise in areas such as operations, investment management, asset allocation, and tax, all areas which will add strength and capability to the enlarged group and can be value creating in their own right. Just a very brief update, therefore, on consolidation. And much of this you will know, but we are some way now towards achieving our target of 10 billion of MCEV. We're just over 6 billion following the completion of the AXA transaction, and we expect to go further in building on that. We are very content the more we look at the detail of the 75 million of synergies that we announced at the time of the formal deal announcement on the 24th of June, that they are realisable over a three-year period, and we maintain our position that £400 million of cash should come out of the business after interest costs on a sustainable basis for the future. We think those points, in combination with building scale in protection and in pensions, really underpin the mid-teen target return that we have committed to our investors since we launched the company in 2008. On top of that, we are increasingly, I think, seeing some interesting upsides in terms of cost savings that may not be factored into the 75 million. For example, we have not factored any alternative way of looking at operations through outsourcing. We have got clear revenue synergies that might emerge from a higher annuity capture. At the moment, both Friends and AXA operate on about a 20% annuity capture from its vesting pensions. We can do better than that, and there's very significant profitability that can drop to the bottom line from doing that. We've assumed no financial synergies in terms of capital or tax, and we've assumed no synergies from bringing a good portion of the 102 billion of financial assets that we now have within the management of a group-owned company in asset management. And we continue to have plans to build, to acquire rather, an asset management capability. We think that of course, we have the reattributed inherited estate release, which we'll know more about towards the end of the first quarter next year. And I'm very pleased we've been able to negotiate an underpin of how much comes out of that or how much is available to shareholders from that in terms of the clawback we've agreed with AXA on the deferred consideration notes. And we think we've got wide optionality for the next transaction. We've clearly got room to build further our market share in the protection market and in the pensions market. We very clearly have a priority to grow our annuity capability, both in its own right, because we think annuities are an important product for the country and for society going forward, but also because it will help capture the synergy of annuity capture from vesting pensions. And we think we've got opportunities to grow in investment products where the life insurance industry has a competitive advantage. So we think there are lots of options going forward for further activity. In addition to the value potential from consolidation, we've always believed that the UK life sector will benefit from increasing its focus on value creation and cash flow, coupled with greater investor transparency. The 6 monthly results for Friends Provident, the first full half year results under Resolution's ownership, begin to illustrate, I think, this value potential, as they reflect the initial impact of the work we've done with Trevor and his team to refocus Friends Provident on four things. Firstly, on improving cash flow, both at an operating level and also in terms of balance sheet cash management. Secondly, focusing on the value of new business and not simply the value of sales. Thirdly, on continuing the cost-cutting programme and the cost-control programme that Trevor put in place during the FP strategic review when he came to the company. And fourthly, on preserving the low-risk but robust balance sheet. Now, Jim Newman will run through these results in more detail in a moment, but I'd just like to highlight a couple of key points of progress that they give rise to. I think we are showing a strongly positive impact on the cash held in the balance sheet. Note that this is true cash, real cash, available to shareholders, not encumbered cash. This has been the result of our review of the balance sheet, which Jim will take you through in more detail in a second. Secondly, strong and early progress has been made in improving Friend Provident's operating cash performance. This is core to our thesis and provides a strong basis to underpin our strong cash flow expectations of £400 million on a sustainable basis, incorporating the AXA business. Thirdly, we've also shown positive value of new business metrics, achieved through an outstanding performance at Lombard, a strong 6 months in our international business, and a pleasing performance in the UK. In the UK, we have generated an improved result from modest levels of growth in sales. This has been achieved by being highly disciplined regarding investment of cash in new business strain and on the returns and paybacks which are achievable. All in all, we are greatly encouraged by these results. They provide a strong basis for value creation in our underlying operations and will support the value we expect to create from consolidation. I'll now ask Jim now to take you through the detail of those results. Jim.
Thank you, John, and good morning, everybody. Before I get into the detail of the numbers, I'd just like to provide you with a reminder of the basis of reporting for these numbers. As is usually the case with resolution, the comparatives are not straightforward. We acquired the Friends Provident Group on the 4th of November 2009, and the half-year numbers for 2010 therefore include Friends for the whole of the 6 months, but the statutory comparatives for the same period in 2009 only reflect resolution on a standalone basis. To aid an understanding of the results, we've therefore included comparatives for the Friends operational performance within the business review, and I will use these as the basis for explaining performance with this presentation. Even in using these operational comparatives, some care should be taken, as they were not prepared on directly comparable bases. I will bring the key differences out as I go through the presentation. Looking forward, I'm afraid, things will not necessarily get any easier. The announced AXA transaction is expected to complete in the third quarter, as John's outlined, and this will mean that the statutory numbers will only include 3 or 4 months of the AXA Life business performance. We propose to provide full year IFRS numbers for the acquired business in the business review for 2010, and will provide an acquisition balance sheet on both an IFRS and an MCEV basis. The MCEV results will only be included for the post-transaction period, as AXA have not produced MCEV numbers to date. Turning then to the results, overall we believe these represent a very strong set of results. The IFRS-based operating profits have increased to £203 million, including a £182 million increase in the Friends operating result. Of this increase in Friends, £54 million was due to the effect of acquisition accounting, but even allowing for this, the net improvement of £128 million represents a 440% increase. The MCEV operating profit also shows a substantial increase to £180 million. The Friends MCEV operating profit increased to £188 million. This too is impacted by changes arising from the acquisition. We estimate that had the Friends Provident operating profit for the first 6 months of last year been prepared on an MCEV basis, it would have been approximately £20 million lower than was reported on the Friends Provident EEV basis that these comparatives reflect. The year-to-year increase of £67 million, or 55%, would therefore have been even higher on a like-for-like basis. Cash generation has remained a key priority and focus. In addition to the £180 million identified as available to shareholders in the 2009 results, a further £170 million has been paid up to the UK holding companies post the 30th of June, reflecting the cash generated in the period, bringing the total for this year to £350 million and increasing the total cash available to shareholders to £605 million. All of the group's businesses have seen improvement in profits, reductions in proportionate new business strain, and increased releases from enforced surplus. If we look first at the IFRS performance in Friends Provident, the IFRS-based operating profits have increased from £29 million in 2009 to £211 million in 2010. This reflects a number of drivers. Despite an overall increase in annual premium equivalent income of 43%, the absolute level of new business strain has reduced by £8 million. In the UK, where sales were up 6%, strain reduced from 49 million to 35 million, or 26% of APE to 17% of APE, primarily reflecting the benefit of reduced acquisition expenses and lower commissions. In international, the reduction in strain comes from total new business strain increasing to 2 million to 13 million, but increased sales of 43%, with expenses held at 2009 levels. And Lombard saw the greatest increase in APE, 187%, but new business strain and increased by 21% to 23 million, again through tight expenses control and reduced levels of commission, clearly demonstrating the benefits of scale. The aggregate profit arising from the release of the in-force surplus increased by 39 million. This reflects reduced maintenance costs, the benefit of increased annual management charges across all businesses. The management charges increase results from the comparative improvements in investment markets compared to the first half of 2009 and the increase in the size of the in-force book. Operational performance was also strong in the period compared to the same period in 2009. Investment returns and reserving changes contributed an increase of 29 million to increased profits. The most material element of this, 17 million, was in the international business, where the write-off arising from a reassessment of actuarial reserves in 2009 was not repeated in 2010. Improvements in the return on fixed asset investments backing annuities contributed 52 million to the overall increase in operating profit. This reflects a number of factors, including an increase in the valuation interest rate following a switch of assets from gilts to bonds, the absence of any credit defaults in the period, and a small profit arising from differences in the movements between assets and liabilities. Finally, as I've already mentioned, the IFRS operating profits also benefit from the accounting for the acquisition. The benefit amounts to 54 million and primarily relates to deferred acquisition costs, which would have been amortised as a charge to the in-force surplus pre-acquisition, but are effectively replaced by the amortisation of AVIF, the acquired value of in-force business, post-acquisition. AVIF does not form part of the operating result. This can be seen from an analysis of IFRS profit after tax. The net result of the key drivers I've just outlined was an operating profit for Friends Provident of 211 million. The resolution group companies posted an operating loss of 8 million for the first 6 months, reflecting the operating costs of the group net of investment income on the cash held. Non-operating income amounting to 96 million was comprised of 12 million for short-term fluctuation in investment returns, 23 million for the F&C Commercial Property Trust prior to reducing our holding below 50% in April, and the grossing up for policyholder tax of 61 million. The total charge for the amortisation of intangibles arising on acquisition was 167 million, of which 142 million related to the amortisation of AVIF. This is partially offset by the reduction in deferred acquisition costs that were charged to the release of in-force surplus, as already discussed. The final influences on the profit for the period before tax were 9 million of non-recurring costs and 16 million in respect of the proposed, including 6 million in respect of the proposed AXA transaction, and a 16 million add back of the interest payable on the STICS, that's the Step Up One Insurance Capital Securities. This interest is included as a charge in operating profits, but is added back here as it's required to be accounted for as a movement in equity holders' funds under IFRS. Moving then to MCEV. Overall, our MCEV profits have increased to 188 million from 121 million. This reflects increases in all of the business units and reflects the movement of a number of drivers, including increase in the value of new business of 49 million and an improvement in operating experience variances of 63 million. This is offset by expected existing business contribution fall of 31 million, which I'll come to later, and development costs increasing by 14 million. Looking at the individual drivers, the increase to 81 million in the value of new business was 40, and therefore an overall improvement in the period of 49 million is an increase of 153% on the first half of 2009. This does, however, include the benefit of a 75 bps liquidity premium in annuity reserves in 2010. The estimated premium at 30th of June 2009 was 100 bps on this basis, and the value of new business would have been 12 million higher in 2009 on a directly comparable basis than that which was previously reported. In the UK, the value of new business increased by 19 million, of which 12 million was due to this change in the valuation of annuities, with the majority of the remainder of the improvement coming from new pensions business, which improved 5 million on slightly reduced sales volume, primarily reflecting reduced acquisition costs and commissions. In the international business, the value of new business increased to 10 million as a result of increased sales volume, whilst keeping expenses flat. It's a similar story, but an even more impressive one for Lombard, where the value of new business is up to 31 million, an increase of 244% based on increased sales volume, a broadly flat cost base, and a mix of business that reduced average commission levels. Whilst the value of new business has increased, the expected return on the existing business has fallen by 31 million to 92 million. This is primarily due to the move from EEV to MCEV implemented upon the acquisition of the Friends Provident business. As can be seen, the move to MCEV had a material impact on the expected existing business contribution, a total of 31 million. This was driven by two key influences: the revision of the reference rate for annuity business to 1 year swap rate rather than the gilt yield curve, and an increase in the cost of non-hedgeable risk. The 2009 full year expected existing business contribution, which was prepared on an MCEV basis, was 176 million and reflected these revisions. Mid-year recognition of 123 million of profit for half one 2009, prepared on EEV basis, did not, and therefore the second half year, as shown by here, was 70 million less, reflecting not only the performance in the period on an MCEV basis, but implicitly including the impact of the rebasing of the first 6 months of the result. If one assumed that simply dividing the 2009 full year result of 176 million by two would give an indicative level of the expected unwind, this would suggest that the half year result for 2010 is consistent with the level of expected return seen in 2009. Moving back then to MCEV profits, the year-on-year development of MCEV operating profit also illustrates a 63 million improvement in operating experience. In 2009, operating experience variances, predominantly in respect of persistency, were 35 million negative. In 2010, operating variances are 28 million positive. Persistency levels in the UK are in line with the business's expectations of higher lapses in the current challenging economic environment. At 31st December 2009, we established a provision of 63 million to cover short-term adverse persistency. In the first 6 months of the year, 18 million of this provision has been utilised, and there has been therefore no charge in the period directly to profits. In Lombard, experience was in line with assumptions, but in international, lapse rates did exceed expectations, and a charge of 5 million for adverse persistency has been made. Other key operational experience was positive, with positive variances against assumptions for mortality, morbidity, maintenance expenses, third-party fees, and the release of a 14 million prior year tax provision. The last impact on operating profits is an increase of 14 million in development costs and other variances, effectively a reduction in the level of profits, of which 8 million is an increase on development spend in respect to our corporate platform and the development of the Tesco distribution platform. The balance of 6 million relates to positive operating assumption changes and variances in 2009 that were not repeated in 2010. The total profit on an MCE basis for the period before tax increased to 186 million from a loss of 7 million for the same period in 2010. This is primarily a reflection of the 188 million operating profit in Friends that I've just outlined. and also the operational loss of 8 million in the resolution group companies outlined in the foregoing section on IFRS profits. Economic variances for the period were positive at 16 million after absorbing the impact of an increase in the mark-to-market cost of the group's debt. As with IFRS, the non-recurring items amounted to 9 million charged to profits, and after allowing for tax of 38 million, the profit for the period for the group was 148 million. There are, however, two material charges to this profit in arriving at the comprehensive income for the period, which is effectively the increase in value in the period that is attributable to shareholders. The first of these is a charge of 54 million in respect of the defined benefit pension scheme, which represented actuarial losses of 78 million, accounted for on an IFRS basis, offset by related tax credits of 24 million. The second charge is in respect of foreign exchange adjustments, primarily reflecting the impact of the depreciation in the euro on the valuation of the Lombard business at the 30th of June. After allowing for these two impacts, the comprehensive income for the period is 62 million. Looking then at capital and liquidity, the capital of the business remains strong. The group IGD surplus, which stands at an estimated 1 billion at 30th of June, is maintained at the FPH group level as the ultimate EEA entity, and therefore excludes the 297 million of funds held at the resolution group level. The estimated 1 billion surplus represents 213% of the group capital resources requirement, excluding the with-profits insurance capital component, and this compares to our target for this ratio of 150%. For the individual Friends Provident Life businesses, capital requirements are driven by the higher of the statutory Pillar 1 test or the economic Pillar 2 test. We seek to maintain capital at 150% of the Pillar 1 requirement or 125% of the Pillar 2 requirement, whichever is the higher. The impacts of managing this policy are covered in more detail later in this presentation. In addition to a strong capital position, the group also has strong liquidity. Cash available to shareholders has increased to 605 million, and the group has an undrawn funding facility of 300 million available, which will increase to 500 million on completion of the AXA transaction. The group still maintains a market value of debt to gross MCEV ratio of 13.4%. And whilst this is up slightly from 12.6 at the 2009 year end, this is purely a reflection of the movement in the mark-to-market value of the debt in the period. Based on the operating profits that I've outlined for the half year, and supported by this strong capital and liquidity position, the directors have declared an interim dividend of 5.46 pence per new ordinary share, in line with the commitment made in the prospectus. This equates to an aggregate dividend of 79 million for the interim and an annualised yield based on the share price of 2.46 last night of 6.7%. Looking more closely at the cash, as a result of the operating profits and cash invested in new business strain, Friends Provident shareholder resources have increased by 170 million. Which, after allowing for the return of shareholder return on shareholder assets, the interest paid on the sticks and the resolution corporate costs, results in a net increase in shareholder resources of 167 million. This increase in resources is a combination of cash and other movements in shareholder net assets excluding accounting adjustments such as deferred acquisition costs. This compares to a total of 260 million in the full year 2009, which included positive fixed interest returns of 176 million compared to the 53 million included within these results. After allowing for changes in capital and illiquid assets, shareholder cash generated in 6 months amounted to 156 million. That is real cash that is available to shareholders without restrictions. Can be seen in this summary as well. The 156 million of cash generated means that retained shareholder cash available has increased by 95 million to 605 million after payment of 61 million for the final 2009 dividend. As can be noted from this slide, 170 million of this cash was in the life operating businesses at the 30th of June. This was paid up to the Friends Provident Group companies in August, underlining the fact that this is real cash capable of being paid out of the life businesses, and brings the cash holdings to just over 300 million at the Friends Provident Group level, and total cash transfers to group this year to 350 million. During the period, the company also completed a Pillar 2 capital review, which identified a significant reduction in the level of capital required to be held. This resulted from management actions taken in 2009 and 2010 to balance and manage risks in the funds, and also recognises the benefits of improved markets at the end of 2009. As a result of this, the IGD Pillar 1 capital requirements are now the binding constraints at the end of June 2010. Reflecting all of these changes, the capital requirements in the period were reduced from 677 million to 482 million, a reduction of 195 million. During the same period, shareholder resources held as working capital, illiquid or restricted assets increased by 205 million. A good proportion of this reflecting the assets held in the life business that can only be released once a valuation is undertaken. We will continue to optimise the shareholder resources held within the business and would expect to see further releases of the amounts tied up as working capital, subject to the year-end actuarial valuations and, of course, the performance of markets in the interim period. We are also reviewing the overall structure of the funds as part of the planned integration with AXA Life businesses. In summary then, the first 6 months of 2010 have seen strong cash generation and profitable growth. The increase in overall embedded value reflected MCEV profits after tax of 148 million, which funded a shareholder dividend of 61 million, the strengthening of the pension fund reserving of 54 million, and reflected the 32 million impact of the weakening euro on the Lombard embedded value. Available cash in the period increased by 95 million after payment of the 61 million dividend. Lombard delivered strong growth during the period whilst increasing IRR to 23.1% and reducing payback to 5 years. Overall MCEV for Lombard increased by 35 million before the impact of the euro exchange rate depreciation, which saw the net increase then reduced to 3 million. International businesses also delivered strong growth, improving IRR to 18.3% and payback to 5 years, and an increase in their MCEV of 62 million as a result of the profits generated. In the UK, growth was more limited to 6%, but margins and payback did both improve. Cash generation in the UK was particularly strong. The reduction in MCEV of the period of 123 million reflects the transfer of 170 million to available cash and the strengthening of the pension scheme, which was essentially all charged to the UK. The margins in the UK do still need to be significantly improved, a transformation that we believe can only be effected through consolidation. The announced AXA transaction, due to complete in September, consolidation is now underway. On that note, I'll hand you back to John.
Thank you, Jim. Just to wrap up very briefly, I think if we look forward in terms of internally, if you like, within Resolution and within the Friends Provident to become Friends Life businesses, I think we see our priorities as really building on this success story. I think we've seen very significant improvement and development in the first 6 months of this year at an operating level, and the cash that emerges from strong financial disciplines and operational disciplines over the business, and we very much want to maintain that position and build on that position. Of course, we have to, from completion, really get stuck into the separation of the AXA business and then the integration with the Friends Provident business. And initially, we need to make sure that we've got our sales forces and our marketing functions and our single brand to the market ready to go for when we launch the Friends Life brand into the market in the first quarter of 2011. And alongside all of that, we need to ensure that we're able to really turn those intangible, presently intangible upsides that I mentioned earlier into real returns and real cash for shareholders. We really believe there is value in those, but there's work to be done to realise them. The market remains very interesting. Of course, I think that we expect the market, the investment market environment is going to remain uncertain. The regulatory position is still not completely clear with Solvency II and beyond that, the whole approach of the UK regulator in the light of the changes that might take place here in the next couple of years. And I think positively, we've seen the whole market responding to investors' demands for greater clarity, greater transparency, better sustainable profitability, and certainly more cash flow coming back to shareholders from the insurance industry. And I think for the sector as a whole in the UK, they are very positive developments. At an M&A level, we remain confident that we're going to be able to secure further acquisitions to grow our market share in protection and pensions and to really fill the gap that we have in annuities. And of course, positive dialogue has continued on that front all the way through this year. The bottom line, as far as we see it, really, is that there is very strong standalone value in the business we have presently. We have got real momentum behind the two contributors to our value thesis of consolidation and operational cash flow. And I think in particular, the latter really underpins the high dividend yield that is inherent in our dividend and share price. Then we think we have significant upsides and we're going to be working very hard to realise those for the benefit of shareholders. So I think a very good set of results, good positive development since the end of the year in terms of closing the AXA transaction and securing the synergy benefits, and a lot of work to do next year, but I think still very much from a positive point of view. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. That takes us on then to your questions and our answers. Could I ask you please to give your name and your company as you ask your question?
Good morning, Greg Patterson, KBW. Two questions, not three this time.
Not three. And are there five parts to questions?
One part to each. The first one is you've released some of your credit provision, it appears, where others didn't. You want to discuss why you did that? Sort of against the tide. Second question is, I mean, what puzzles me about resolution, well, it doesn't puzzle me, I've got a firm view on this, but I'd like to hear your view on this. Why, if you're making value creating acquisitions, is the share price going down? I wonder if you think the market's missing something or what you think the market's thinking about and if that would change.
Jim, do you want to take the first one, and John?
We haven't actually changed our process on our policy for credit allowances within the period. The benefit that came through an IFRS is because there have been no defaults, and clearly we carry a default allowance within the unwind of the in-force. So we haven't explicitly allowed for release of credit during that period. It's just coming through from the change in the book. But we're maintaining the same margins, effectively, within our annuity book.
What about the SME? Into corporates.
There was a switch from a small element of gilts into corporates, but put in the context, was about 2 million to benefit from that.
John.
Share price. Well, you guys set the share price, not us. So in a way, it's a kind of rhetorical question, I think. I think the share price before we announced the AXA deal reflected to some extent a kind of partly paid stock because the market was expecting a very weighty rights issue, which we have now completed and with enormous support from our shareholders, I must say, behind that. I think that as we start to see the completion of the AXA transaction, we can report progress on the integration, we can report progress on the emergence of the synergies. We can maintain our operational strength in terms of value of new business and cash flow, that we would hope the market will start to see the enlarged company as being a more normalized life insurance business and therefore look at the share price in that light and re-rate the share price in those terms. Of course, we plan to make additional acquisitions, but I think that's from a position where we had one business with no synergies to having two businesses with significant synergies and significant upside potential and optionality. And therefore, the market might look at our shares differently in the future to how they perhaps understandably have looked at them in the past.
Thank you. In the middle.
John Hocking, Morgan Stanley. Two questions, please. Can you comment on the cash position? To what extent can you finance a future acquisition from cash over and above the combined capital resources and capital surplus of the group? That's the first question. Second question, could Trevor please give us an update on what's going on in terms of trading in corporate pensions and protection
okay.
in the UK?
Jim, are you happy to start and then off to Trevor?
Yeah. In terms of the specifics around cash at a given point in time, i.e. now, you can see there's 600 million of cash there and a commitment to pay a dividend of 79 million. So there's about 500 million of cash at the group level that is free cash that potentially could be utilised as of today for other corporate purposes. There's also, as you note, 400 odd million sitting within the fund that currently is tied up and is restricted, even though it's not directly reporting, directly supporting the capital requirements of the business.
And then more on a pro forma basis, once the AXA deal completes in September, to what extent can you internally finance through cash?
Well, a lot of that's going to depend ultimately on structure, so I don't think we're in a position where we can alter that, answer that question, A, without having completed the integration and make sure we understand that the picture of the funds post that is as we expect it to be, and B, it would depend on the nature of what you're then looking at in terms of the debt position of it and all of the other elements of it. And returns in the period and so on. So I don't think we can give a pro forma answer for something we don't yet own.
Yeah, in terms of a trading update, it's very interesting. It's been a tough in the UK. The conditions have been pretty tough. The protection market, you've seen the results of the other companies with present. They've reported sales. Some have been up a bit. Others have been down a bit. We're down a bit. It's a tough market. There's no real growth there at the moment. It's very competitive. We've improved our performance, but we've still got some way to go on the protection side. We're quite positive about the outlook, but it's not easy. The corporate pensions market, there's been a bit more growth there. We have seen some softness in the additional contributions being made to existing pension plans. No doubt that's been caused by the economic conditions. I think what's really significant for us, though, and where I am very, very excited, is the announcement of the second transaction. Announcement of the AXA deal has been very positively received by all of our distribution partners. Some of them might have been sitting back and waiting to see what might happen, if anything would happen. But now that this deal has been announced, it's been regarded very, very positively. The confidence in the company and the combined company going forward is high. Significantly, we've maintained our panel positions on all the panels of employee benefit consultants and consulting actuaries. You may remember that we came off panel when Friends Provident was going through its strategic review, and we worked hard to get back on the panels. We came off panels again when the resolution came across the horizon. We worked hard to get back on the panels. This time, with transaction number two, AXA, we've been able to maintain those panel positions. So it's a very strong story for us going forward, I believe. I think we're in a very good position. You know, for example, you know, I had a meeting with a CEO of one of the IFA groups there a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about what we're doing, we're talking about what he's doing and all that, and what we might therefore do together. Clearly, regarding us as one of the survivors, if not one of the winners in this consolidating market going forward. That's quite a different story to what it would have been 6 months previously, where I might have been lucky to have a cup of coffee with him. So it's a very interesting market we're going through.
Thank you. Okay.
The front row there.
Thanks. Good morning. Christian Dinesen from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Two questions, please. The role of debt in the potential next transaction, maybe you could talk a little bit about that. You gave us a number of 13.4% of resolutions, gross MCEV. Is that the sort of number that might steer how much additional debt you could put into the next transaction? Should we look for a leverage number? But maybe you could talk a little bit about both the level of debt you might be willing to take on in a transaction and also what it might mean from where it would come. Would it be pure holding company debt? And would that imply that the group would need a rating or resolution would need a rating? Okay. So that was question number one.
Yep.
Question number two was just nitpicking a little bit on the wording when you talk about the M&A wide optionality for the next transaction. I can't remember what you said the last time you talked about this. Is it wider than it was last time you talked to us about that?
Okay.
And in specifically, would it be so wide that there might be no synergies with the existing two businesses? Thank you.
Jeff.
I'll pick the debt point up. In terms of the current ratio of 13%, we've said that in the medium term we would expect our debt ratio on an MCEV basis to tend towards 25% for the end entity. In terms of how much debt would go into a subsequent transaction, that's purely dependent on the nature of the transaction. So it depends on the cash flows that it could support. It will depend on the debt that is already in it and how that is structured. And it will also depend on whether the capital markets are open at the time. So to give a definitive number, I'm afraid I can't. But I'll give an indication of where we think ultimately the level of debt may be appropriate.
And issued from?
It would be issued wherever it's most appropriate to issue it in terms of the nature of the transaction. So you'll have seen this time we've issued the deferred consideration notes from resolution, or will do upon completion. But equally at the Friends Provident level, we have said that we'll be issuing Tier 2 debt. So to answer your point on the rating, I do not think it likely that resolution is likely to seek a rating, but I would expect that for any public market debt, clearly there will need to be a rating to support it,
yeah.
And therefore Friends Provident Holding will at some point need to do so.
John?
Yeah, I think it's on the second point of narrower, whatever, optionality. I think wide optionality is the term we've used since we announced the AXA transaction, for the reasons that I spoke about earlier in terms of bulking up in protection and group pensions and building the annuity capability much more strongly. And, you know, we are value-based builders of businesses. So we're not going to acquire businesses for the sake of bulking up. We're only going to acquire businesses where we think there are synergies or where we think there are other kinds of value-creating opportunities. And we maintain the view that that there will be businesses that will fit that sort of profile that we'll be able to acquire and we'll be able to finance.
In the middle, please. And that one. Thank you very much.
Oliver Steele from Deutsche Bank. Two questions. The first is, you've increased the return coming off the back book. This is looking at the IFRS profits. Ignore in the original Friends Provident format. Can you break that down between sort of expense savings coming through and the improved return on the actual assets? The second question, I guess, is to do with the timing of future acquisitions. I thought before you were talking about a cut-off date at the end of 2011. You now seem to be talking about acquisitions up to the middle of 2011. And I suppose linked to that, I'm also, I mean, would you be prepared to raise equity before accessing the capital from the AXA inherited estate?
Jim, do the first one.
The short answer is, do I have the figures in my head of the relevant split between earnings and expenses? I'm afraid I don't. And so, no, I can't answer that question. I don't think we have that to hand, do we, unless you have it, Emily?
It's worth having a look at the FPG RNS as it gives a bit more of a breakdown. But the big driver of the in-force surplus is going to be the annual management charge income, because the funds, policyholder funds, have grown substantially in the first half of 2010, which is the same period in 2009.
Mm-hmm. You happy with that, Oliver? Or do you actually want real numbers?
Well, we may have to come back later.
Yeah, well, we may have to discuss that offline.
The exact split.
But when people have actually got numbers in front of them. John?
Timing. No, we've the language we've used here is very consistent with what we've said in the past, which was I think we said when we completed the transaction to acquire Friends Provident in November 08, 09, yeah. How about that, we would see the next 18 months or so, at least through the next results season, as being a period where we thought further acquisitions would take place. We maintain that position. As we've said today, would we make further acquisitions beyond that? Well, we might, because we are pragmatic people and you can't always dictate timing, but we feel confident about making further acquisitions, certainly in that window. But we are looking to build a business that's going to be attractive to the capital markets longer term. And if that means making acquisitions beyond that date, and they suit and they meet the test that I just spoke about in terms of synergies and value creation, then we will do that.
And would you raise capital or would you raise new equity before accessing the AXA inherited estate?
I think we wouldn't rule anything in or out at the present time. It would be foolish. I think we just need to look at what opportunities will deliver the sort of business we're trying to build and the returns and the cash flows we're trying to deliver to shareholders. And the timing, all of that will be what it is. And we'll look to put the right level of kind of mix of finance in place at the time that opportunity is there.
Including vendor finance, if that's
possibly including vendor financing. Possibly including going back to the debt markets and using internal cash resources.
This always comes down to timing and the nature of the asset itself. Yep. And therefore, you can't answer these questions in principle. Yep. It's not a question of evading the question. It's just it's what it is based on what you see before you and the opportunity you have. Can you pass the microphone back? It's Andrew's turn, I think. I always know Andrew because he stands head and shoulders above everybody else.
Everybody does me.
Three questions. One, could you give us a sense of your target on annuity vestings from the 20% level?
Yeah.
What you'd like to do. Secondly, could you talk a little bit about the role of the international businesses within the reconstruction phase, to whether they are core, particularly FPI, whether that could and would be sold? And thirdly, Jim, I wonder whether I could ask you to have another go at the question which Mark asked you about the internal firepower you've got, because, I mean, it is quite important. I mean, we've got the cash situation of your company now. Let us assume that you do access the amount of money from the AXA estate that you've laid out, and you have actually said you'd target debt of 25 to 30% of gross EV, and let's assume that the acquisition doesn't have any debt within it. I mean, could you please try and give us some sense of order of magnitude, because I think it is fair to do that.
Okay, annuity vesting. Is that Trevor? Would you like to take that first instance?
There are some companies are getting significantly higher. We're not going to give a specific target, and we just observe that the sort of level that we're getting is not as good as it should be or it could be. So I don't want to give a specific target, but some companies are getting significantly higher than the 22% that we've quoted here.
And the international businesses? John Bob?
The international, I mean, obviously we're very delighted with the performance of the international businesses, self-evident in the figures we're publishing today. And we will absolutely continue to support them. We are going through the phase of our consolidation project right now of building it. Clearly, when it comes to looking at the equity story of the business we want to return back into the capital markets in due course, we'll be looking at the mix of businesses that we think will be most attractive. And we'll do that across the board. I mean, we'll do that domestically and we'll do that internationally, as we should in terms of creating an attractive business to the market. Certainly, we have no intention of disposing of any business today. The contribution of those businesses is very strong, and we continue to support them.
Jim, you're going to have another go then?
No, not really. I will try to answer your question more fully as to why I can't. I think it would be very imprudent for us to give you an exact number. You've talked about the areas in which we should consider what's coming through. We've been quite clear about how much cash we have now. We've said where our debt would go to, but I would caveat that very strongly against the it is subject to markets and the structure of the organisation that we would potentially buy. So to give a figure on that at the moment, I think would be inappropriate. And it will also depend on the way that the business integrates with what we have got as to how you can structure that. The debt is very much driven by the way in which you put those funds together. And it also then will determine clearly the size of it, how much debt you can take out against the whole.
You've given us a medium-term target of where it's changed from 25 to 30% to up to 25%.
It's still 25 to 30. I mean, the key point on that is the end state target that we expect to get to when we have finished the acquisition phase. How we drive that debt through on the way through will depend upon the nature of the target assets that we purchase. So that's why we're only at 13 at the moment, because we're looking at the nature of the future cash flows. It depends what the cash position of the asset you buy is. It depends on what the pace at which the EV unwinds is as to the rate at which you take the debt out, because we don't want to take debt out for an EV that comes out all within the first couple of years, essentially, as opposed to an EV that's going to come out over a 30-40-year period quite evenly, because the debt needs to be geared to the future cash flow profile of the business. So I'm not trying to evade your question, but it would be misleading.
Can I reframe the question and say, what is the available resources internally without raising more debt?
In terms of that, we've answered where we are now, and we've given you an expectation of what is potentially, which is we currently have the 500 million of cash. Well, it's 600 less the dividend. Including AXA UK, we still think we should do the integration before we make any commitments to how much of that may or may not be available for firepower.
I think there are too many moving parts, Andrew, for us. You shouldn't expect us to come right now, you know, given we don't even own this business, with sort of firm numbers. I think it's just too many moving parts.
Just order of magnitude.
No, I realise what you're after, and it would be unwise for us to commit, because that's effectively what that becomes at this point.
Gentlemen, just there, Sammy.
Raghu Harihan from Citi. Just two questions on your acquisition strategy. The first one was, could you flesh out your kind of strategy around acquiring an asset management business and how you would manage the conflict between, say, a potential acquisition and the breakup clauses that you've got, say, with AXA IM, and potentially the FNC. The second question was more about clarification on the strategic gap in annuities. Would you be agnostic between buying a pipeline, i.e. a corporate pensions book, versus buying a direct annuity writer?
John?
Yeah. Well, on asset management, I guess that there are two ways we can get into having an asset management capability so that we could look to bring some of the 102 billion of monies within the group. One is, and very obvious, one is that we buy in a standalone asset manager, and two is that we acquire an asset management business with a life insurance transaction. I think it remains our very clear intention to acquire that capability one way or the other, but not to build it. So I don't think that we see building organically from the ground up an asset management capability as being a sensible thing to do, but that our future acquisitions will look to include an asset management capability. In terms of the conflict with the current arrangements that we have or will have with FNC and AXA Investment Management, they are what they are. You know, some have break clauses in, which will, you know, we can understand the economic cost of that, those break clauses. Some don't, and some go out for a considerable period. So some are available to bring in house at very, very short notice, in particular shareholder and non-profit monies. So it's a whole mixed bag of different arrangements. But I think we feel that out of the 102 billion, there is a sufficient level of money that we would be able to bring in-house under our own management, capture our own fees, bring in the VAT synergies that come with those fees, not leaving the group, to make that a very worthwhile part of our thinking. On annuities, I think our feeling is that if we are to get a higher level of vesting pensions into our own annuities, then we need to have a more serious annuity capability and a more serious annuity presence in the whole market, including in the open market. And so I think it's likely that to be able to get to that position, we would need to acquire a capability that will bring with it a book of annuities, because otherwise the capability is not going to be there. They're going to go together, aren't they? It may well be that we acquire much greater level of corporate pensions so that we can, you know, we get our 22% up to a level which is much more like the market norm across a much larger book of vesting pensions. So the synergy benefits improve even further.
Thank you.
In the middle? We'll come back.
Morning. Trevor Moss at Berenberg. Question for Jim. Could you comment on the shareholder tax position? I noticed that there was a relatively low charge. I guess you've got some tax loss carry forwards sitting around in there. Wondered also whether you'd done the analysis on the AXA shareholder tax position as well, so you can give us an idea of what we might expect once you start consolidating all that. Second question, I think for Trevor, just in terms of the international sales, which are obviously very strong, whilst at the same time new business strain is low on a relative basis. I wonder if you could give a little bit more detail what's been going on in both FPI and also Lombard, what sort of products you've been selling and how you've managed to boost sales so dramatically whilst paying less commission. Just a little bit of detail there.
Thank you.
Question for Mike on the asset management side of things. Could you just clarify exactly whether, I mean, obviously if you buy a UK Life company with asset management capability, that's a part of UK Life project. If you buy a standalone asset management company, is that able to be part of the UK Life project, or is that a separate project that needs to be voted on by shareholders, etc.? And if that is, are you then able to do the transfer pricing that enables you to escape VAT if it's a separate project? And just sort of following on from that, I noticed there's some references to, and there have been previous references to US Life discussions and various things. I think it might even be new that it's including Eurozone as well now. I don't remember seeing that in the prospectus, but in any case, what is the thinking in terms of the corporate structure there? Are any of those US Life or Eurozone projects able to be included within Resolution Limited, or is this going to be an entirely separate scenario?
Completely understand. Okay. Should we start with shareholder tax?
Certainly, yeah. In terms of the shareholder tax for the period, you're quite right. We have an excess position of I over E, which has supported the shareholder tax rate in the period. There's also in there a 14 million release of previous tax provisions for items that we think will no longer apply in respect to our tax position. In terms of AXA, no, I can't, I'm afraid, give you a detailed steer on that at the moment. We are currently looking at a number of pieces of work to look at how those businesses could potentially be put together. As you can imagine, one of the considerations of those looking at the efficiency of capital would be to understand the different tax impact of the way in which they could be combined. So I'm sorry, I can't give you any greater clarity on that at the moment.
Trevor.
Yeah, delighted to talk about the international businesses. They've been a real success story for us. Both of the international businesses, the FPI and Lombard, have benefited from the improvement in economic conditions and sentiment relating to investment matters, certainly, in various countries. The FPI story, as you know, was strong in the Middle East and in the Far East. Hong Kong, we've had very good growth there. The Singapore operation, which is still a relatively new operation, sales there, we've got figures in some of the documents that are before you today, sales there have increased very significantly indeed. We've got the small Malaysian joint venture where sales have doubled as well. So there's a good story right across the patch as far as the international business is concerned. Hong Kong is the particular one. That's sort of a big weight for us. And Hong Kong sales were up by 38% first half this year compared to first half last year. We've been trying to push the business and encourage the business to be more capital light, although the new business strain in FPI has increased in the first 6 months of this year compared to the first 6 months of last year, but by not as much as the percentage increase in sales. Lombard's particularly interesting. Lombard, again, has benefited the sales increase in Lombard has come across the board. There's not any particular tax-driven event that's been responsible for a peak in sales. What we did do in Lombard this year was to manage the sales much more actively than we've done in the past. So the combination of the improvement in conditions and a more active sales management, I think we foreshadowed this at a previous session where we said that we were changing the sales incentive system, for example, in Lombard to be based on 2 half years rather than 1 full year. And the sort of active management of the sales process, weekly monitoring, weekly encouragement, weeding out of poor performers, just much more attention to the sales management process has given us a much more even set of sales results from Lombard than we've seen before. We've also been working on a capital light strategy there to encourage actuarial funding type business being sold more than has been done in the past as we put more emphasis on cash. So the international business is going very well.
And there was a slight commission slant to that question, wasn't there, Trevor?
Well, only in respect of boosting sales by as much as you have, you know, the great performance in Hong Kong, blah, 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 is on lower commissions is kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah, well, it's been an effort, you know, by the sales force, by sales teams. I mean, nothing spectacular. In the Lombard situation, we did introduce this actuarial funding type approach, which therefore gives you a better metric.
Okay. First of all, I think I have to say that I think if you go right back to the very early prospectus and the very early discussions with shareholders, Resolution has talked variously about rolling up in closed life companies in Northern Europe. So that point about Eurozone shouldn't be new to people, because that commentary has been out there, just as there has been commentary about potentially doing a closed US life roll up. So
the Eurozone was mentioned in the prospectus you just published there. And I could be wrong.
Well, certainly in terms of potential consolidation with Europe, it's been there, but we've been specific that it wouldn't be Southern Europe, more Northern Europe. As to the specific question about if we bought a separate asset manager, yes, that is within the UK Life and Asset Management project, but we would almost certainly take it off to one side. In other words, its financial metrics would be separately measured, and if there were the ability to create synergy by moving assets or activity across from, let's say, the original investment across to the second investment, then we would do so. Indeed, if we go right back to the very inception of Resolution, the board has debated exactly what process it would go through in order to ensure that a proper fair value was moved from, if I put it crudely, A to B, without playing ducks and drakes with the financials of the initial investment and the need for that to be audited and separately reviewed by the board. So as it then relates to potentially, I mean, and now we are in speculative territory, going into something quite new like rolling up in the US, then my own personal view, and this would need to be checked with shareholders, if the shareholders believe that there was money to be made and they were prepared to invest in that, and I have to say it might be the same houses but different people, i.e. different people on the other side of the Atlantic, that it's, to me, it intuitively feels better to have a new company, a US-denominated company that's raising US dollars in the markets and making US dollar acquisitions. So the chances of something like that sitting within a UK FTSE 100 sterling-based, Guernsey-based companies is highly remote to me, because I can't actually understand how any shareholder would find that sensible. And in any event, you're suddenly investing in something that started off doing this and now it's all mixed up with something else. And actually, our whole thesis has always been with the shareholders, there has to be absolute clarity in terms of what you're investing in. We've always talked about these different attributes of the UK life industry, breaking the new business away from the back book, and there's the asset management piece over here. To me, it would seem counterintuitive that you would mix something like that up, that's all about clarity and transparency, with piling into it something else that's completely different, will have different characteristics of the share, and different shareholders may be interested in it. So I think the answer is they would all be separated, but we would clearly consult with shareholders as we went through that process. Is that okay? James.
Morning. James Pearce from UBS. Three questions, please. First of all, AXA wrote quite a lot of investment business last year. FP shut their investment business down a couple of years back. What are your thoughts on the business that you're acquiring there? Second, bancassurance. Do you actually want the bancassurance relationships that AXA had, and how much would you be willing to pay to get them if need be? And thirdly, I'm really confused on the cash flow. There's a statement that says you made 61 million or something of free surplus. How do I relate that to the 156 million of real hard cash that you're talking about on one of your slides?
Trevor, the first two are for you, I think. And Jim?
Yeah, thanks. AXA, you know, we don't own the AXA business yet, but the AXA distribution business, they've got a very successful distribution bond, which looks like it's got good metrics, and that looks to be potentially very attractive. That will come across to us, and we're looking forward to having a good close look at that. In terms of the second question about the bank assurance links, the question is absolutely, definitely yes. We're very keen to retain those bank assurance links. We think they're very important. We think it looks to us from the outside that AXA's done a very good job with the links that it's put in place. We know they're highly regarded by the those organisations that they've been working with, and we're very keen to work alongside AXA in the new world to complement what they're doing. They will have a pretty impressive wealth management offering. We of course will specialise in the protection area, and we think we can do that very well. So that's very important to us and very positive, I believe.
Jim, a bit of reconciliation.
Yeah, briefly. First of all, the 156, just to be clear on what that represents, that's the 170 million of cash that in August was transferred out of the life businesses. That's the cash spent within the Resolution Holding and Friends Provident Holding companies during the period. So it's 170 less the 14 that was expense. So that's the real cash that actually moved within the organisation, and that's our core measure for cash, is what can you actually count. In terms of the differences between that and free surplus, the key elements that are going to be within that are clearly, when we looked at our total performance over the period, the cash that we generate takes into account capital movements, takes into account any changes within the movements for restricted assets. It takes into account absolute cash flows. It doesn't take into account, therefore, the revaluation of Lombard, which is an exchange rate movement of 32, which was just a book adjustment of valuation of 31st of June. It doesn't take into account the transfer to the pension fund, was an actuarial funding deficit. So those are the two big items that, when you're looking at MCEV rollout, would not reflect through from the MCEV through to the actual cash transfer.
Sounds like you might have to write that down.
On the investment bond business, is the distribution bond substantially all of the AXA Investments business?
It's a significant portion of it, yeah.
Okay, there was a lady in the front who's been very patient, and it's her turn now.
It's Daria Sadoleva from Bank of America Merrill Lynch, and I've got just one question on new business strain. You've achieved a really good reduction of new business strain as a percentage of AP. I'm just wondering how much further it can go down and what would be the impact on margins and paybacks. Thank you.
Who's going to try that one? Well, Trevor or Jim?
Yeah, I mean, we can both have a go. I mean, we keep watching this and trying to move it in the right direction. I mean, it's come down for us because of we stopped paying commission on the pensions business at the beginning of 2008. It takes a while to feed through. We're still paying commission on pensions business in the UK in terms of business in force, increases in contributions to those pension plans. So you'll gradually see the mix continue to shift as the new business becomes a greater proportion of the total. So it's an arithmetical average. But yeah, it's a move in the right direction, I think, is all we can say.
I think in terms of the factors that will move directionally, we've identified 75 million of synergies from the AXA transaction, and a good proportion of those relate to acquisition costs. So we would expect that to translate through into further reduction in acquisition expenses.
Yep, that's right.
And clearly the intention is to try and get more volume through for that, which obviously then gives you a greater proportion attached to your APE. Where I don't think we'll see anything other than the full year benefit coming through is further reductions in the commission rate in the short term. We've got the benefit of the actions that have been taken within Friends Provident coming through now, and we'll get the full year effect of that this year. But that was more of a, I wouldn't say one-off nature, but it was certainly a rebasing compared to paying non-funded commissions to paying funded commission.
Another one to look at is the Lombard experience in the 6 months this year compared to last year. We've had a very significant growth in volume, but we've been able to keep our acquisition costs virtually constant, and therefore that ratio has come down very nicely as well.
Very conscious of time, I'm going to take two more questions. Gentleman in the second row here.
Hello, thank you very much. Andy Hughes, Exane BNP Paribas. A few questions on the annuities, if I could. On the 22%, is that unrealistic to expect to get up to the 40% that people have talked about in the past for retention of annuity portfolios? The other question was, obviously some hints about increasing expertise on asset management, asset allocation, which I'm assuming is also to do with annuities. Have you optimised the assets backing the annuity portfolio in Friends, or is there kind of more to come? And the third question was relating to some other questions you answered about, obviously you mentioned about defensive asset allocation is quite important to the group, but at the same time you obviously talked about buying annuity expertise, and my understanding is most of these annuity providers would have not so defensive asset allocation. So I'm just trying to wonder, are you ruling out buying effectively a bulk annuity provider on the basis of his assets, or would you consider somebody who's got potentially riskier assets to add to the group. Thank you.
John, do you want to kick off with?
Yep.
Go on to the skills point.
Yeah, I mean, I think
we'll talk. Perhaps Jim will talk about defensive asset allocation.
I think on the annuity front, where might our 22% go to? I mean, I think, you know, frankly, we would want to look to double that or more. And we think that by doing that, we'll still only be at the market norm level. I mean, I think we understand that probably the best in the annuity market might be getting higher than that. We shouldn't shoot for that right now. But there's a lot of value for new business that can drop through very quickly by achieving those sorts of conversion rates. On the sort of whole investment asset allocation front, I think that it's been one area that that Friends have not focused on building, and I think that with the AXA transaction, we are getting some, you know, really quite serious investment capability that's coming across from the AXA group, and certainly will enable us to be, I think, more active and a little bit more dynamic in terms of asset allocation and looking at driving investment performance, but without putting shareholders' capital at risk in a way that we've said all along that we wouldn't do. So I wouldn't say that we are switching from our defensive position. We are not. We think a safe balance sheet that can throw off mid-teen stable returns is still our core proposition. And in terms of the annuity market, I think we need to secure the annuity capability that can help us achieve those conversions of vesting pensions. And you know, the bulk annuity market is a very specialised and different kind of sector and may not bring those sorts of skills. On the other hand, you know, they do have skills in-house which, perhaps not a book of business which is related to the retail market, but they have skills that probably the people have had in the past that come from the retail market. So I don't rule it out, but it's not something that probably is centre of mind.
And I think it's worth saying, John, not only are we getting those executive skills coming over, but with Carl Sternberg's appointment to the board, we've got those at the non-executive level. So we've got a guardian there as well.
Yeah.
Last question. John.
Can I just come back on Trevor's question? I'm a bit bemused about the US life comment, because it's new, as far as I can understand. The European thing, I remember that being in the original prospectus. The US life is new, and then you talk about it being in a separate entity listed in the US. So are you just sort of fishing there to see if shareholders are interested?
First of all, it has been out there, and we'll go back through the prospectus and check, but it shouldn't be new news. Because we have various, over time, Resolution has talked about getting involved in a number of areas. Let's be quite clear. The absolute focus right now is on UK life and asset management. That's where the board's focus is. That's where RL's focus is. I was only answering a speculative question that said, if you were to do something like that, it could easily be rolling up German closed life funds or something else. Then all I'm saying is, to me, my own view, and this would have to be subject to confirmation with shareholders, is you'd probably put that in a separate entity. It would be a separate investment vehicle, and it might have some commonality between, you know, common directors or something. But all I'm saying is I don't want people to leave this room thinking that if we were ever to go down that road, that we would necessarily mix it up with all the attributes, the returns, all the things that we've promised the shareholders, all the things they can measure, mix that up with something else. That's all I'm saying. And it was a hypothetical question and it was a hypothetical answer.
I think the US life has not, to my knowledge, been in the press release before, not been the same. The European stuff has been. I don't remember yet.
Well, that's interesting because we've got one record. We'll go back and check it, but you've got a recollection.
It was in the exactly.
And John, I think
I must have read the first half. You read the second half.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
That's not always our fault.
John, you should be in no doubt that the thing that drives us in Resolution Limited is the clarity of the equity story at exit, because that's where, you know, we're going to be able to pass into the capital markets a clean, well understood, cash generative business. And if we think, and we'll do this entirely in consultation with shareholders, in the way that we set the business up in 2008, the structure of this business, which I think, as I said in my remarks earlier, has been through a good stress test here and has come through it very well in terms of how we do things. We've still got to deliver the results, I have to say, but how we do things has been very positive. And that was designed in consultation with shareholders.
Yes.
This would be as well.
Yeah.
But we are not going to pollute the equity story that we want to take back into the market. I think that would be our advice to the board,
yeah,
at the very least.
So I hope that's clear, but please don't either leave the room thinking that's the next project, because it's not. It was a high hypothetical, and that was my hypothetical answer. Right, I think we have really run out of time. Can I thank you very much, everybody, for coming along and for your questions this morning, and travel safely on your way. Thank you.